Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday Morning MV Pro Call. Today is April 11th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to Motor Vitality and whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by visiting MotorVitality.com, where you can listen to years and years and years worth of archives. Definitely super excited to have you guys live, though. I mean, alive and live, both of which are good things. But anyway, want to start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, which is asking, was there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that is worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with? Any questions you might have or anything we can help with?
Kelly, I think there was one pretty important thing that happened this week.
Yeah, I think probably what we were just discussing right before we started recording here, but go
okay.
ahead.
Okay, no, just talking about the EPA finally came out with guidelines for PFAS.
Right before we started recording, and I was wondering if somebody was going to bring it up officially. Jen, you're absolutely right. So you brought it up. What have you heard? I mean, you're working with ResinTech now, which is, you know, this is going to have a huge impact on you as a supplier, because, I mean, talk about it. Talk about what you're hearing.
So, you know, everything's been so wishy-washy. As we have been traveling and talking to different distributors and dealerships, you know, of course, PFAS is the emerging contaminant. That's what's out, you know, that's the big thing. But nobody was really wanting to start doing anything with it until they had the guidelines. So now the EPA had listed 4 parts per trillion for probably the most common two, and that's the PFOA, and I don't have it in front of me. What was the other one? PFOS, yes, that's it. And PFOA and PFOS. So they're 4 parts per trillion on those. And so now people are going to, not only dealerships and homeowners, but the municipalities are going to start using that guideline. And they have 5 years to come into compliance. So where that, as far as the company I work with, we need to make sure, and not only us, but all the other media companies and cartridge companies and filter companies, so on, they all have to make sure that our products are certified to that level. So that's what we're working towards. There are some that we already have certified in states, but that's going to be
be really interesting. And this is a brand new, they just announced this, although it's been coming for a long time. You said 5 years, Jen. I thought I read 2027, which is a 3-year compliance, but I wonder if there's different compliance levels or different requirements. But you're right about the, just to put this in perspective for everybody, it's my understanding, Paul, you and I were just discussing this too, that 4 parts per trillion is equal to 1 grain of salt dissolved in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. So this is a tiny amount. The other thing that I thought was interesting regarding this article was that it's only for 6 of the most common PFAS, PFOA contaminants. And the four parts per trillion was only for 1 or 2 of them. I'd have to go back and don't quote
two.
Me on that.
Hey,
but then the
Kelly,
others,
yeah.
Was it 2 of them? It was 2 of
yeah,
them,
it's,
yeah.
It's Paul, yeah, it's two of them.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then the
PFOA
others.
PFOA and PFOS.
Yeah, and then the others were cumulative. So they have, if you have a combined, they were 1 part per trillion each with a max cumulative number up to those. So, and keep in mind that when it comes to, you know, PFAS and PFOA is a class, it's a category of contaminant, and there are over 10,000, I think over 11,000 different chemicals that fall into these categories, this class of chemicals. So this is only the beginning of this. It is a it is going to have a huge impact on our industry, you know, not only with requirements for certification and removal, but also in disposal. I mean, now you have a disposable media. It, you know, does it become a hazardous material? Do you have to document the disposal? You know, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to come down the road. And so more than ever, I think this it becomes absolutely critical to get involved in your local state and national associations, like, you know, your water quality associations, because otherwise you're counting on people that don't know much about our industry or point of use, point of entry treatment methodology to make these rules. And you need to have a voice, because otherwise there's going to be a law that's going to be passed that's going to have a detrimental impact on your dealership or your company, and you won't have a seat at the table. So I would start getting those involvement, you know, getting involved in that now, so that you can spearhead. So I will, it is my intention to, in the next few weeks, try and find, as we hash this out and more people have read it, this article just came out yesterday morning. It's my intention to find somebody that can come speak to us on this call with a little more information and potential impacts here. But yeah, I would stay on top of it for sure.
You know, they're kind of stating it's the public water systems. It takes effect in 2027, and you have to have a solution for it by 2029. So Jen was correct in that 5 years.
Well, it is 5 years. Okay. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. I just read the article brief. We've got a class in this week, so I read the article briefly yesterday so thank you. And you're right. I remember when they lowered the arsenic standards back in, 2003, officially the EPA came in and lowered the standards for arsenic. And it was a similar thing. Everybody, you know, there was a huge, it was a big deal. You ran into the same thing. This feels very similar to me, much bigger in many ways, but the EPA does not regulate private wells, you know. And so keep in mind that local and state or regional entities can actually make more stringent requirements for private wells. They can require testing on a private well. We saw this with the arsenic, where suddenly there were townships and counties that wouldn't approve a well unless they had an arsenic test or they treated the arsenic level. So that was, you're right, the EPA only regulates public water supplies. They don't have jurisdiction over the private wells, but state and local entities do, and usually they follow suit and sometimes make the requirements more stringent, and that is going to have an impact on us for sure. Paul, you were around when Paul from Traverse City, Paul from Massachusetts too.
Wherever
you guys were around with the, doesn't it feel a little similar to the arsenic situation?
It's a lot less well defined. That's one of the big differences. It's because it's not a specific element.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to get your hands around exactly how this will play out.
Yeah,
it's a very interesting. It is going to be interesting. You know, we had one of our dealerships out of Grand Rapids, Michigan, was dealing with the Wolverine Boot Company, and there were times they had to put 16 tanks into a home.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how did work?
You can, if you've not seen it, I mean, it's a little outdated, but now because they've lowered the standards so much more, but if you haven't seen it in this PFAS issue, or you don't know what PFAS is, and there's still a lot of people that have heard the term but don't really know where they come from, but if you go to YouTube and look up John Oliver, Last Week Tonight, but just type in John Oliver PFAS and it will come up, the clip that he did on PFAS. They actually show one of those systems in a home, based because you have a house that was on a well that near the Wolverine Shoe Company, and they actually show these tanks in series in the basement. But he does a really great job of explaining PFAS with an overview, a little bit of language, in it. But so if you're offended by that, then there are lots of other sources. But it's one of my favorite clips to show people to kind of explain the PFAS issue. If you haven't seen that, it's absolutely worth a watch. Just be aware that also The Devil You Know is a documentary that kind of explains how we got where we are today. Or if you really want to, you know, get a couple hours, the movie Dark Waters by stars Mark Ruffalo in it. It plays the attorney that really is kind of the father of the PFAS issue, for sure, in terms of bringing this to light and how big a deal it is, and it gives you a lot of back history and story on it. So this is going to be an interesting time for our industry. I'm wondering how much of a topic this is going to be when we go to DC next month. You know, we're going. Who else is going to be heading to DC next month with the Water Quality Association? I'm going to be there. Who else? Anybody else on the call is going to be? Jen, you'll be there. Nice. Excellent.
Yeah.
Who else? Sorry, no, Paul, you will be. Paul Friot, right?
Yeah,
you'll
be
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I suspect that this is going to be a pretty hot topic when we go. It's going to be really interesting to get the take of some of these legislators and what, you know, where their heads are. But more than anything, I'm super excited about making sure that they understand that our industry becomes probably one of the most important industries available. I mean, it just is. It's kind of an exciting time to be in the industry. I mean, talk about job security, you guys. What an exciting, awesome time to be part of the solution to this huge problem. I don't know if you guys feel that or not, but it's just pretty cool. But
I think the governmental entities to work with us is so much better than working against us.
Without a doubt.
On a different note, you know, we put a system in that was doing great. They were carbon block filters. But then the man that was working for the community at that point in time told him that they had to pull them out because they didn't go through the right paperwork, and they weren't even exceeding levels. They were just being proactive to it.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Nightmare. It's going to be frustrating. There are going to be, because there are people out there that are going to be making the rules. And this is why it's so important, again, that we get involved in those associations, because remember, the purpose of an association, any association, no, is legislative influence. It's legislate, you know, providing information. I mean, you think about any association out there, that is its primary role. That's what it's designed for. That's why we have associations. And the more membership in each association, the louder the voice, you know. And so if you have people sitting around trying to figure out how they're going to make the rules or what they're going to do or whatever, remember, most of them that are making these decisions are elected officials, and very few of them are coming from our industry. You know, most of them are attorneys, you know, and so, you know, if you look at it, you don't have that many even medical doctors, you know, in those elected official positions. So you've got to, we have to be there being the voice, letting people know that we have solutions. I mean, I can't stress the importance of getting involved in those national and regional associations. I just, you have to get involved with them. Otherwise you're going to be stuck having to abide by legislation and rules that just don't make a ton of sense. So, final thoughts on this. I mean, this is definitely going to be more conversation about this. Like I said, I would love to get an expert on once we sort of hash this thing out and get a better idea how it's going to impact us. But so we'll stay tuned. We'll look for that here in the not too distant future. But your customers are going to hear about it. It's making national news. I'd become familiar with it because your customers are going to be asking about it. Any other comments on this before we jump into our topic? So, all right. So I wanted to today talk about owner's manuals. And I'm curious, I guess I could ask the question, but I don't necessarily want to put everybody on the spot, but I can tell you in my experience when I'm working with service technicians or install technicians or sales professionals or owners or managers. It's amazing to me how often I run across people that have never read their own owner's manuals or their own service manuals. And I find that to be really interesting. I always did when I back way back, you know, when I was in sales, literally last century, right? I found that I got ambushed by a customer. We had a reverse osmosis for that. This was way back when I was in sales, the first year that I had been in sales. I was out there and the customer asked me a question about the reverse osmosis system that we carried. And I was like a deer in headlights. I had no idea what they were talking about. I'll tell you, actually what it was the recommendation about sanitizing the reverse osmosis. It said that in addition to filter changes, you had to sanitize the reverse osmosis system once a year. And I mean, this was in the owner's manual. And I remember a customer, I had sold the reverse osmosis and I went to do the follow-up on it. And they said, how do you sanitize to be sanitized once a year? I'd been out there selling them. I'd gone through training. Nobody within my company had ever talked to me about sanitizing the unit. I honestly had no idea that the owner's manual even said that. It talked about, and it had this long procedure on how to go about doing it, and I had no idea. It was a little embarrassing to me that I didn't even know my own equipment. And so from that point on, I made it a point, anytime we had a piece of equipment, I made it a point to go in and read the manuals. It was also interesting to me when I read the service manuals or the owner's manual or, you know, the service or installation manuals. There were a couple times that I learned things about our equipment that were completely contrary to what I had been taught about it. So there was one particular piece of equipment that was all upflow bracketing, countercurrent regeneration. This was one. And never knew it. It never talked to me. I'd always been told that this equipment was all downflow. It was all co-current regeneration. And I read it and realized that every one they all came upflow by default. They all came upflow. There was one that I, in reading the service manual and reading the thing, I thought that it was making soft water brine. Out there saying that it made a soft water brine, that it filled the brine tank up with soft water until I read that the service manual. This is what I've been taught. I've been taught it by the service techs. I've been taught it by the service manager, by the company, that this was all a soft water brine. This was one of the advantages it had over some of the less expensive equipment. Come to find out when I read the owner's manual or rather the service and install manual, I discovered that it really wasn't. It made brine with hard water, filled that brine tank up with hard water. And it was simply, I was being taught stuff by somebody who believed what they were saying was true, and they had learned it from somebody else. I don't think there was anything malicious about the way they were training. I just think that somebody hadn't taken the time to really read their own manuals, their own equipment. And so I got in the habit of reading any piece of equipment that I sold or put out there. I got in the habit of reading those manuals. I didn't want to be ambushed or surprised by my customers, but I also wanted to make sure that I was selling the equipment that I was selling accurately and talking about it with, what maintenance there needed to be, because we do need to follow the installer, the manufacturer's recommendations for maintenance, for service, unless we have a really good reason for not doing it. That's something we should be doing. And the customers, if customers read those manuals, and if they know more than you do, it can be very problematic. I'm going to take it one step further and then open this up for a little discussion, found that it was very beneficial, and it's actually really helped me now, given what we do, because, with the installer training, we train, this week we have one manufacturer at the training facility, and if I wasn't familiar with that equipment, it would make it way more difficult to instruct or do the installer training or set it up than if I didn't have any familiarity at all with this brand. In 2 weeks, I'm going to have a completely different manufacturer here, and I've got to read those manuals and know what features they have, you know, if I'm going to train people. So one of the things that I suggest to you, if you're out there in service or sales, you don't have to become an expert on other people's equipment, but if you have a competitor out there, man, those manuals, you can download them go to the PDF, go online, you know, to the internet. There's this thing called Google these days, and you can put it in there and find the owner's manuals for just about every piece of equipment that's out there, almost every single one. Now, sometimes it's a little more challenging to find the service and install manuals because, you know, there are some manufacturers that are very, you know, they're proprietary as they have a right to be, right? So there are some proprietary things that you don't want some companies out there, you know, you don't want everybody out there being able to go in and tinker and mess with your equipment, you know? So I get get that stuff, but the owner's manuals are almost always out there. You know what the homeowner's reading and seeing, and those owner's manuals do have the features. And, you know, they tell how it's going to be set up and what it's going to be capable of doing, and you know what its features are. I would read those. I would know what do your competitors have. I mean, why not be aware of what you're up against? You know, it's going to make you a lot more, it's going to be apples to apples comparison. It's going to make you, and look, what you learn also when you do that, for me, it helps me to really have a lot more respect for my competitors. Okay. So I don't want to get into the situation where I'm bashing them, you know, saying that, oh, they have this and we have this. I don't want to bash them. I mean, there are some times that you find, I mean, sometimes I found that they, you know, they may have a different feature than mine has. It may be a little different. I want to know about that. It just makes me, it made me a lot more customer centric, and a lot more respectful of the people that were, that I was out there selling against. So I'm kind of curious, what do you guys think? What's your opinion of this?
I love the manual. The spec sheets, what the unit's capable of doing. If you don't know anything about your equipment, you better be reading about it. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Paul, do you, you know, with your team, your service and you know, when I was regional manager of the dealership that I worked with, we studied manuals, so we would take this on the sales, you know, we had joint service and sales meetings, so once I gained that position, I stopped having separate service and sales meetings. We always had them together, but we would gather everybody around, and when we had these meetings, and as part of the meeting, we would read the manuals. We'd pick not only the manuals of the equipment that we carried, but we would pick a competitor manual, and we would go through it, and we would look through it, and we would talk about it, and so that, you know, we made that mandatory. But do you encourage your team to read and know these manuals, not only your own but others out there? What's your take on that?
We do look at competitor manuals as well to see what the other units are capable of doing. We have tests for our guys. All of my sales team have every manual at their fingertips on their iPad.
Yeah, yeah.
In case they come across something that they're struggling with, they can look it up to make sure that they're applying the right piece of equipment.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, it just keeps you from getting kind of ambushed or caught by surprise, doesn't it?
It sure does. You are not.
Yeah. Who else? Who else is doing this? Or reading manuals, or has it ever happened to you that you know somebody said something that you weren't aware of?
I keep certain parts of the manual in my binder, like the annual maintenance required on an RO is one of them.
Yeah,
and efficiencies and things like that, because it's a really good source if you know what the competition is. And if you know what yours does, when they bring up, well, you're much more expensive.
Yeah.
Well, Yes, we are, and here is why. Especially when you get a lot of, you know, you get the, you know, for people that go to Home Depot and buy an RO, the filter life, they may say change them once a year, but the filter life could be a half to a fourth of what our filter life is.
Yeah, I know. I love that. I mean, it can definitely help compare that apples to apples equipment for sure. Right.
Uh-huh.
That you're absolutely right about that. I love it when that, you know, the warranty information, you know, especially at the box store stuff, right? You look at the warranty and you've got, you know, a non-existent or a 30-day warranty on the membrane, for example, you know, like, I mean, which is not uncommon for those, you know, for the, for a box store unit, you know, or there's no warranty at all on any of the filters, pre, post, or membrane, you know? So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, that, it does help because all the, usually the warranty information is listed in those manuals as well. Absolutely. Anybody else?
I also have the extended warranty that you can buy at Home Depot.
Yeah.
And it excludes water softeners.
Does it really? Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome. See? And you learn that from... you know, from reading the manuals, reading the paperwork. I mean, it really does
exactly. It
help us understand, you know, what's going on there. Very cool. Okay, what else? Anybody else? anybody else have any thoughts on it? I mean, has anybody else had experience or read them? Or what do you guys think? Anybody disagree that reading these things or being aware of them is beneficial?
It is beneficial.
All right.
Go ahead, Paul. It is extremely beneficial. How can you sell something if you don't know something about it? It's almost like snake oil at that point.
You know, that one does, honestly, it always surprises me. And I don't, you know, I'm sure everybody on this call has read it. It sounds like you guys are all familiar with it. But if by chance you haven't, or you have somebody there that hasn't, I would, if you're in a leadership position, I'd strongly consider making this part of your training process. Okay. This is it really will make you a much more informed, stronger team. If you are in sales or in service or install listening to this, or you're out there, start with your own. Get them and start with your own. I hope that is is something that you're taking from this call. But if you, but don't limit it to that. I would read the other ones that are out there. You know, understand what's out there. And look, I don't ever please don't ever take your competitors' manuals and bash them. Even the Home Depot warranty that you're talking about, Stacey. I don't think this is something that we take. In bash, I think we present it as factual, you know, as what they are, but doing it with respect. I mean, it is an apples to apples comparison, you know, when you're doing it that way. You know, if you can take two warranties and compare them side by side, that is a way to show, look, it's for the money that you're paying there. Yeah, there's a reason that ours cost more. There's a reason that you buy it from a professional company that's, you know, has certified equipment and is going to last longer. And here's why. You're not bashing that equipment at this point. You're saying, look, if you want to buy, I mean, a bicycle and a F-150 are both vehicles. One costs less than the other, but that's because one does a lot less than the other. They're both cars. They're both vehicles. They both. From point A to point B a lot faster than walking. But there's a big difference there's a big price difference because of what it's capable of doing, what its features are, what its longevity is. That's why the price difference. It's not because the bicycle is so much different than a truck. It's because they're two different types of equipment. They're doing two different things. Okay. Any final thoughts on this? Any final thoughts or comments? So I want to say thank you to everybody. Again, please stay tuned. We will be discussing more of this PFAS issue. I'm pretty excited about that issue for our industry. I think it's an awesome time to be involved in the industry for that. So stay tuned. We'll try and learn more about this and have this discussion again in more detail in the future. But everybody, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll call that a day. Take care. Be safe. We will talk to you next week, if not before. Thanks, everybody.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
Thanks, Kelly.